This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to In Depth, presented by the San Antonio Express News. My name is Luis Vasquez, and I'll be your host as we bring in journalists to give us an inside perspective into the stories they bring to Express News each week. Today, I'm joined by investigative reporter Marina Starley-Fryker and staff writer Liz Hardaway, as well as photographer Jessica Phelps. They're on the show to discuss the... the city's continued efforts to remove homeless camps during the pandemic. Welcome to the show, ladies. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you so much for having us.
Great. So let's go ahead and get started. Give me a quick recap of the reporting, Marina, please.
Yeah. So we actually started this back before the winter storm happened. My colleagues Liz and Jess have been working on stories kind of following the city's efforts to continue to clear encampments over the last couple months or so. And this all kind of came to a head in early February when the city cleared one of the largest camps under I-37. They didn't know it at the time, but about 10 days later, we would have the record winter storm hit. So all of those folks ended up having a lot fewer belongings to really make it through than they would have had the city not cleared it. We ended up kind of taking a step back after that happened to try to figure out, okay, how many times has the city done this? Because the CDC actually says that cities should avoid sweeping camps or clearing them out, whatever term you want to use, because doing so can disrupt folks and spread them out into the community and then spread COVID. And then, of course, when you have vaccines, it's harder to find them then vaccinate them. So the city has told cities not to do this the CDC has told cities not to do this during the pandemic. And we actually found that the city had done sweeps 151 times since June. So that is not quite along those CDC guidelines.
I remember that came up specifically because I went down to go see Councilman Trevino down at the, it was right near his field office, wasn't one of the encampments?
Yeah, Liz, you can probably talk better about that since you covered that. I don't think that was really like, I don't know if I would call it an encampment. I think he was actually just letting folks sleep there if they wanted to.
Yeah, there was about maybe a dozen homeless people at Trevino's field office. Just he was letting them stay there. And that same week as the I-37 sweep, that Friday, they kind of threatened to sweep the homeless people at Trevino's field office. So we were there at 6 a.m. with protesters and Trevino and his staff just to kind of see what would happen. But later that day, Eric Walsh came and they said the sweep was off. And I think they're working towards solutions.
In the article itself, you do talk to some people who have experienced homelessness. I want to talk more like as a journalist, how do you approach that? Do you go, how does that process start? I'll talk to Marina and then Liz, if you guys could talk about that.
Yeah. So Liz, well, actually everyone else here, I think had been working on it a little bit longer than me, but I guess whenever I approach that situation, I approach anyone exactly like how I or a family member would want to be treated. So like, yes, folks are living in public spaces, but that still doesn't mean that, like, I mean, they totally have a right to privacy just like anyone else. And if anything, you need to be much more respectful because folks are so vulnerable. So I think, and clearly, I mean, they have a lot of distrust in these systems that are kind of meant for them, and they sometimes have distrust in the media too. So I think that really it's just kind of showing that, like, you do care and you respect them and you respect their privacy. And then you can kind of like build the relationship from there. Because I think and this has been kind of a trend everywhere, homelessness in itself is an economic and social issue, but cities have kind of moved towards criminalizing homelessness, whether that's ticketing people for being on the sidewalk or sweeping their belongings. So you kind of need to approach it kind of with all of that social and economic context around that, and knowing that these folks are really vulnerable when you go to approach them.
So I agree. You just need to approach them with a lot of respect, like Marina said. And I mean, they're people too. And you're basically going to their home and asking if we could talk to them and take photos of them. So it's just about respecting that privacy. And I mean, also, so we've seen media outlets, particularly like some TV news, go to the camps and just kind of film without permission and, you know, have them in the background and not even talk to the people living there. And so I think it's about just being like, hey, we respect you. We want to get to know you and not just, you know, use you as a backdrop.
And for the most part, are they pretty receptive to that? Or do you do find a lot of people just don't want to talk?
It depends on the day. And sometimes you get lucky and find people who are really friendly and want to talk to you, but also sometimes it's just the wrong time of day, or, you know, they're worried about like police officers or, you know, a sweep coming. So then they're not as receptive.
I have a question for you, Jess, as well. There's a photo that's kind of like the main one for the article. As soon as you get to the article on the website, I believe it's a woman sipping some coffee, and there's a sign in the back that says, you know, lock your car, take your belongings and stuff like that. It's like a really powerful image. And I wanted to know what your process was when you go out and you take your photographs. What are you looking for? How do you communicate with your subjects? And yeah, just speak on that for a bit.
Well, you know, that kind of, you know, depends from, you know, person to person. But with Leslie, for example, the woman in the photograph, I had met her a few days previous. I just got into the camps one evening and I saw her and a friend at their tents, and you know, they kind of smiled at me. So I walked on over and introduced myself, and we started talking, and I asked if I could sit down and, you know, just sit down right in the dirt with them, you know, and just, you know, we just had conversations for about an hour and a half, 2 hours before I even pulled out my camera. They knew I was with the Express News, but my first goal was to get to know them as people before even trying to photograph them. And so I built that relationship up, and as the weather turned colder, you know, they allowed me to come back to their campsite and photograph them as they were dealing with, you know, their tents had been flooded by some rains that came right before the cold weather. And, you know, with that relationship, we were able to follow Leslie as she made her way through the city looking for a pair of warm shoes and eventually into emergency shelter for the duration of the storm. And, you know, so it's based on relationships. And as you do that, you start to watch the person and see who they are and how they interact with the world around them. And it's just, it's about being observant all the time, you know, and standing back and being able to capture those moments. And, you know, she invited Marina and I to follow her along, and, you know, she just sat down for a snack, and that's where she sat down to rest for a minute. And, you know, you just look around and you see everything. And so, you know, pulling back and taking a wider shot was going to be more powerful to kind of show the entire environment in which she was in. And it's, you know, it's just paying attention to those details.
I love talking to photographers. I really do. I got a chance to talk to Bob Owen before he retired. And I just saw Lisa Krantz the other day. Can you tell me about your setup? I imagine you're out on the street. You kind of have to have, there's a limit to how much gear you can bring. What's your go-to like lens and body combination? Just a bunch of batteries. What's your setup like?
Well, so when I'm, you know, in a situation like this where I don't want to intimidate somebody by having two cameras, which is what I usually go if I'm going to an event or something, I like to have one body with a long lens and one camera with a wider lens. But for something like this, where I'm going to be up close and personal with somebody, I generally use a 24 to 70 millimeter lens on a Canon body. You know, and I just go around with the one camera and a small little bag that doesn't look like a camera bag. You know, cause I want to be able to put my camera away and talk to people without them thinking I'm only there to get their photograph. And in that bag, you know, I've got an extra battery and some extra memory cards, but I just keep it really light and simple.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. Because you're going into the field and I get it. You don't want to be that intrusive, but, going back to the article itself, homelessness has been an issue here in San Antonio for quite a while and it's come up with Haven for Hope. And I feel like it's a problem that keeps coming up. What problems did the freeze really bring to light that maybe weren't brought to light before?
I guess I'll jump in on this one. I mean, I think to some degree, it's kind of like the pandemic itself. It's like, we just know that disasters kind of widen the gap between the people who have the resources to get through them and the people who don't. So, I mean, for this, it was like, it really sucked to freeze in your house, but of course it was a whole lot worse if you were on the street or had to go to a shelter where you were worried about getting COVID and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know, like, I don't think that it really showed anything that was kind of new, but it just kind of exposed what we already know to kind of an extreme. And I think the pandemic did that too. Cause I mean, of course, like folks who are on the street, who don't have health insurance, who don't have a way of isolating, who don't have access to testing, like that's going to be a whole lot worse for them than for someone who is able to work from home through this. So I think that's kind of the big difference there is like this has continued to kind of widen the gap between the folks who are on the streets and then the folks who are in power and wealthy who are kind of making the decision.
Well, I really appreciate you guys coming to come and talk about your article. And the one last question that I really had, and I want to hear from all three of y'all, is covering these stories and covering it throughout the pandemic. I know, like, I've talked to Lauren Karuba when she spent like 18 hours in a COVID ICU and Sylvia Foster Frau when she was at the border and all these like deeply traumatic, like stories. How are you guys taking this like home? I mean, we're all working from home, but how are you guys maybe separating from it? Is it impacting you in a different way than maybe it had before the pandemic? And but I'll let you go first, Marina, but I do want to hear that from everyone.
I think like right when the pandemic struck, I was like finally getting back to normal after covering Harvey. So I would say now I have an even harder time forming sentences than I did like a year ago or two, and writing is a lot harder. I mean, you kind of just try to be really gentle with yourself, but yeah, the last year, I think everyone can say has really sucked.
So I have a dog at home and he is like my little therapist. So that's very helpful.
Your dog has been your lifeline.
He is my lifeline.
So I try to, you know, make sure that every day I take some time out for myself, whether that's hitting a heavy bag or, you know, cooking a meal, just something that's just for me that, you know, lets me kind of decompress and get out of work mode so that I can keep enjoying my life.
I think that's a good place to end it. I really appreciate y'all being on the show and just talking to me and giving me some insight, because I love talking to you guys about this.
Thanks so much for having us.
We love talking to you too.